Recording in progress.
It is wonderful to see everybody here. This is my favorite time of year. It's precept classes. So if anybody has kind of stumbled into this, this is the period in time where we, as a sangha, study the precepts, the 16 bodhisattva precepts, which are sort of like moral guidelines for behavior. And so there's a ceremony at the end of it in which ordinees, like people who come to receive the precepts, can receive them. That ceremony is Jukai. It's in June. And it'll be at the end of this study series. So the idea is that if you're new, this is an opportunity for you to think about receiving the precepts, to kind of gain an understanding of what they are, and then potentially prepare yourself to, you know, understand what it is you're vowing to do in that ceremony. And for those of us who have done it already, it's a great chance to kind of renew our relationship to them and to kind of understand. Because, like, as we're going to find out, like, they're very tricky. They're very, very tricky. And so it's great because you're going to hear from a lot of different Sangha members sort of about their experiences and everything else. And it's wonderful that it's taught by Sangha members who have received the precepts. And it's a really, really great experience. So I highly recommend showing up. I think it's going to run 13 weeks this year, because I think we've got session in the middle and it kind of messes things up. But anyways, it's going to be a really wonderful time. And I am honored to go first. I am Mick. Until very recently, I was a high school teacher. And to that end, we're going to come out swinging first for everybody that's here. There's homework. And that homework is, over the period of time of the precepts, you've got plenty of time. I want you to attend chanting service at least once. Chanting service is what we do in the first 30 minutes of our Sunday service. It starts at 12:30 Eastern time, that's where I am, and 9:30 Pacific time. And because what I'm going to talk about today is sort of like our lineage and our tradition, and how the precepts kind of came through that. And one of the great ways to sort of like feel like a part of our tradition and our lineage is to go to chanting service. It's not for everybody. A lot of people aren't big fans of it. I love it. But it is a great sort of connection to our past. And you should check it out. It's really neat. The other thing that I would say, before we kind of get into it is, if you're considering, taking the precepts, if this is a step that you're thinking about taking, sort of formally becoming a Buddhist, you know, there's the Bright Ways Zen website is a great resource. I'm guessing most everybody has seen it because that's kind of how we ended up here. But one of the other things I would highly recommend doing is reaching out to a Sangha member who you maybe recognize from classes or something like that. If you have questions, you can ask them about their experience taking the precepts. That's something I took advantage of when I was going through that process, and it was really, really rewarding to make those kind of connections. If you are a member of Bright Way Zen, there's a membership directory, and everybody's email is in there. And so if you want to shoot somebody an email that you recognize from class, maybe you like something they said resonated with you or something like that, or you can email me, I'm happy to answer any questions or like give you some support or whatever. That's a great opportunity to do something like that. Okay, so what exactly are we talking about here? I remember when I went through kind of this process, I had a lot of questions and everything kind of like, it kind of felt like a lot of people knew stuff that I didn't know and maybe wasn't necessarily told. And so I kind of want to try to lay a lot of things out for maybe what this is and a little bit of what it isn't, I guess. So we have 16 precepts. And we have three refuges, the three pure precepts, and then we have the 10 grave precepts. And again, we're going to spend a class on each of the grave precepts. I think the three refuges and the three pure precepts are kind of wrapped into one class. And those are our sort of moral guidelines. Those are sort of like how we understand ethical behavior as Buddhists. And we chant them before classes. So in the chant book, it's the Kyoji Kaimon. That's the sort of document that's our tradition, where they have them sort of laid out. And as a Buddhist, when you sort of formally become a Buddhist in the Jukai ceremony, you make a vow to live by those precepts. And then as a part of that, and again, we'll talk about this in a second because this is particular to our lineage. In the Jukai ceremony, you receive a Wagesa, which you may see some people wearing. It's a nice strip of black cloth. It's meant to symbolize Buddha's robes, and it's actually very specific to our tradition. And what I mean by that is like our lineage of teachers. And if I'm correct, I think Joan still sews every single Wagesa. Is Joan, can you, is that a, I think so. I actually think of that fairly often when I put of my, when I put on my Wagesa. I think like this is something that a Sangha member has made. And it's very touching to feel that connection. So that's kind of the sort of like broad scope of what we're looking at. And the talk that I want to kind of lead tonight is going to sort of split into three categories. I signed up for this. Before all these things happen, Domio sends out an email to people who've received Jukai and says, "Hey, you know, it's about that time. Who wants to give a talk?" And I generally like, I'm a sucker for two things when those happen. I'm a sucker to sign up for early ones, like the first couple. And I'm a sucker for ones that sound like vague. So I can just like go off and stream of consciousness and all of that. And this fits both of those because this is sort of like precepts in our lineage and it's first. So, I'm kind of gonna go over, I think, three main things in the talk. The first is gonna be a little bit of like historical context for the precepts, kind of like how they came about, why they look like the way that they do, and in that sense, we're gonna get an understanding, hopefully, of what our lineage does with the precepts. And then I'm gonna talk a little bit specifically about like our lineage, our sort of line of teachers that connects us back to Shakyamuni Buddha, and how, again, how we specifically at BrightWay do things. And then I have the third part of the talk, which is I've called Folding the Precepts into Your Life, which I'm not exactly sure, but I just want to kind of get everyone to start to think about what it means to kind of to receive the precepts and to make these vows and to kind of live your life through these vows. If you have any questions at any time, you can just kind of like my computer is going, it's thinking of thumbs up. If you have any questions at any time, you can just kind of raise a virtual hand or raise an actual hand or just unmute yourself and come up and talk, or in the dirt zendo, you can go to the chair and just start talking. I have young kids. I'm used to being interrupted like all the time, so it's totally fine. Just get in there and go. Okay, so the first thing that I want to talk about a little bit is the history of the precepts themselves. And when Shakyamuni Buddha was teaching and was alive, he did not necessarily outline... before I really get into it, one thing that I just saw that I have a little note. I had originally, when I started out this talk, I was going to sort of like reference like what specific podcast Domio has on like what topics. They're all over the place. There are lots of good podcasts that Domio has on the precepts, on like their history and all sorts of things. You can use the search function on the Zen Studies podcast and find loads of stuff. I just ended up having like 15 different episodes that I was going to point people to, and that's a lot. Shakyamuni Buddha, when he started and had like followers, there was almost a need for sort of like rules of decorum, like things that you should and shouldn't do. And Shakyamuni Buddha came up with rules for the Sangha. They were meant just for like, hey, we need to kind of like keep some kind of order. And instead of laying out a lot, they would just sort of come up as a one-off, you know, sort of once. You would come up with a scenario and he would say, okay, well, we need to make a rule that says you can't do this anymore or you can't do that anymore. And eventually, those evolved into what were known as the Vinaya precepts. And those were the precepts that monastics, and again, they were called home leavers, because you would leave your home to go study and to go follow the way. And there were lots and lots and lots of rules that you had to follow as part of that. And so the Vinaya precepts are very, very old in terms of Buddhism, and they're from original Buddhism, and they've lasted for a long time. Our precepts, the precepts that we follow, sort of evolved from those... I don't want to say indirectly, but they sort of evolved from those in a bit of a different way. So we are in a Mahayana Buddhist tradition and in Zen, and our precepts arose from what's called the Brahmajala Sutra, which was written in 3rd century China. So what's important for us to kind of like understand is the 16 Bodhisattva precepts that we have, okay, those actually came from Dogen, who is the founder of our tradition. But what's novel about them is not the actual precepts themselves. The three refuges existed before Dogen, the three pure precepts existed, and the 10 grave precepts that we follow all existed. But Dogen packaged them into one, and he packaged them in such a way that he, both monks and lay people, received the same 16 Bodhisattva precepts. And so Dogen's story is a fascinating one, and we'll sort of jump into how that happened. So Dogen is the founder of Soto Zen, and Soto Zen is what we practice. We are a Soto Zen community, and Dogen lived in 13th century Japan, and he originally started out as a Tendai monk, which was a sort of as a Zen tradition. Zen existed in Japan, and but what he found in his early years of study was that it's very political. It's almost sort of like being in the Catholic Church or in the Anglican Church. There's a lot of political power wielded by these bodies, and so Dogen actually left Japan. And he went to China to find the true Dharma. And that was his stated goal. He was going to go do it. It's actually a treacherous journey. They're not super far from each other, but it's very difficult to sail. It's very dangerous. And he made the journey to China and studied there under Tendo Nyojo. And what he came back with was what he believed to be the true Dharma. And one of the things that he came back with that was novel, that he did that was brand new, was these 16 Bodhisattva precepts. And he gave them to ordained and lay people alike. And that, there's some like interesting practical offshoots of that that are kind of like a neat historical discussion. But what I think is important for us to understand as we look at this, these series of vows that we're going to take, is like this is what Dogen believed to be the true Dharma. This is what he believes is the most important thing, because he passes these to lay people and ordained people. Monks and lay people take the same set of vows, and they're identical. And they're these precepts. He also wrote the Kyojikaimon, which is sort of what packaged them all together. And this is sort of what is considered the founding of Soto Zen. This is the like doctrinal independence of Soto Zen. And the precepts show up in like ceremonies all over, in like births, weddings, deaths, you know, like the funerals. Everybody, you're checking precepts all the time. These precepts, they are of essential importance to Dogen and to what's sort of like the transmission of the Dharma. So when we chant on Sunday mornings, we talk about how the teachings have passed down from teacher to student, face to face, through generations. And I think that that's a really important thing for us to kind of to realize, is that these 16 precepts, this document that we're looking at, this is a core part of those teachings that have been transmitted, like from face to face, from teacher to student, all the way back to Dogen. And so it's almost impossible to kind of like look at these precepts without understanding the historical link to our past and to our tradition. And so I think, like, you know, one of the things, because we're going to talk about a little bit like what do you do with the precepts? Like, what are they? And I think in a large way, they're a connection to our past. They're a connection to the Buddhas of the past that have brought this to us, that continue to teach the Dharma and continue to turn the Dharma wheel. In receiving those precepts, you become a part of that, which I think is a really special opportunity. So that's a little bit of the history of the precepts. There's a bunch of neat history there, but that's sort of most of that. I wanted to talk about our lineage in terms of sort of like how Zen came to America for a bit, which is it's unique to us. Lineage of Zen comes to America through Shasta Abbey, which was founded by Roshi Kennett, G.U. Kennett. And her story is, it's incredible. She is a towering figure in our lineage, and a great story. She started out, she was an English woman who grew up sort of at the end of World War II, and got ordained as a monk in Southeast Asia, and then trained in Japan for years, and received transmission in Japan, and then sort of as it was very difficult for her to practice in Japan. There was a lot of like she had a lot of negative experiences, sort of like with the traditional Japanese way of doing things. And so she came to America and founded Shasta Abbey, and which is different. A lot of Zen lineage in the United States comes through Zen Center LA or through the San Francisco Zen Center. Ours comes through Shasta Abbey and Roshi Kennett. And one of the identifiable ways that are different is through the Wagesa. So a lot of lineages traditionally offer the precepts to Sangha members, But those tend to, other traditions tend to do it later on. So you would have been a Sangha member for a few years. You would sew a rakusu, which is a sort of larger, almost a bib. Domyo wears a rakusu and Jinryu wears one. I can see, yep, she's got one there, which is almost a larger, and that's also meant to be Buddha's robes. And in other lineages, you would, when you receive the precepts, when you went through the Jukai ceremony, which is typically after a retreat, so they'll have like a week-long Jukai retreat, and at the end of it, they'll do a Jukai ceremony. Roshi Kennett decided that she wanted to do it a little differently. She wanted to offer the Dharma to people and make it easier to sort of take that first step and sort of formally becoming a Buddhist. So the way that we approach Jukai and we approach receiving the precepts with a Wagesa, which is traditionally it's a traditional Japanese element of practice for Zen Buddhists, for lay Zen Buddhists. It shows up in a couple of different ways over there, but we take a Wagesa after a first step of Jukai, which really you only need to be in the Sangha for a few months, be interested in taking it, and then go through this precept series. So that's how our lineage does things a little bit differently than other common lineages that you might see in the United States and how they're brought here. Okay, so I think that's sort of like that's so that knocks out the two kind of like almost like, I don't know, school teacher things. And but now what I want to talk about is I want to talk a little bit about what are the precepts about? Kind of like what are we being asked to do? And so I don't really I'm not really sure how best to do it, but I do want to kind of talk about my own experiences. Coming through and learning about the precepts, maybe because some of it might resonate with some people, at least in terms of like how you see this as being an important part of your life. So I had grown up. I think like all of us, I found Buddhism. I didn't grow up in a Buddhist household. That might be a shocker to some. But I was like always very philosophical, and so I thought that sort of the answer to how to like live life the right way was in sort of like Western philosophy somewhere. I was gonna like read something and I was gonna figure it out, and that was gonna be it. That's what I needed. And so I read lots of philosophy books. And I sort of became this almost avowed existentialist, and that was my big thing. I was a pretentious kid. This might be might be what you're picking up on. The biggest problem that I had with that approach was that it all like I guess made sense. And it helped me understand the world around me, I guess. But at the end of the day, it never answered the question, like, so what? So what? And one of the key sort of like metaphors or like allusions that people use in existentialism is the myth of Sisyphus. So Sisyphus is this Greek figure, and he is condemned to push a rock up a hill, and then when it gets to the top of the hill, he pushes this big heavy boulder, it rolls back down to the bottom. He walks down to the bottom and then pushes it back up again. And the existentialist answer to that sort of conundrum of us being stuck in this life of toil without ever seeing victory was that when Sisyphus walks down, at least he knows next time it's not going to work. And that was like literally it. That was the whole thing. They were like, but you figured it out. And doesn't that mean something? And that was the best that I knew. That was like, I was like, I guess that's what, maybe if I keep reading, I'll figure something out. And after a while, I found Zen. and I found Dummy's podcast, and then I found Brightway, and I remember I joined in November, and that's when I started coming, and I would, at that time, I would, like, obsessively click around the website, like, I gotta know all of it, I'm gonna do this, and I saw that the precept study was coming up. And I was like, "Oh, this sounds interesting. Formally becoming a Buddhist—that's what I want to be." And I had an electronic copy of her book, and she has a section in her book on the precepts. And I remember I would like, write down the precepts, like all 10 grave precepts. I would like quiz myself on them. I would copy them down, make sure I knew them. I think for me, the precepts really give me a way of sort of living my life in a way that's consistent with the way I want to live my life. I don't have to shrug anymore. I have things that I can point to that I say and do that help me live in the way that I want to. I found the precepts to be so compelling, I think, because for so much of my life beforehand, all of the philosophizing and all of the thinking and the rationalizations, it all amounted to, like, so what? And now I feel like there are these things that I can do in a practical way that can help me live my life the way that I want to. And as a matter of fact, I have on my arm, I have the 10 grave precepts on my arm for the rest of my life until I turn into a corpse. And this is like, don't disparage the three treasures, don't be stingy with dharma or wealth. It's a neat reminder of the vows that I've made. And I think that it's a really powerful practice tool. And for me, it's a practice tool that speaks, that resonates, a lot. So the question then becomes, like, okay, so these are something that, see, there's some things that we can do, right? Like, this is a thing that you can do. And I think, the next question that kind of comes up is, like, okay, well, what exactly is it? What exactly is it that we're being asked to do here? Like, you know, am I going to go through and am I going to follow these things, like, as best I can? Or are they meant to be sort of like followed very strictly? Like how do you do that? And I think, to me, this is something that no one has the answer to. And I remember that when I came to this practice, I wanted to do Buddhist things. I was like, I want to call myself a Buddhist. I want to be a Buddhist, and I want to do what a Buddhist would do. Like, that's really what I want. And because it felt like I had come to this. And I think in that's what unites all of us, is that we have all come to this practice. I was raised in a Christian household, and I was confirmed in the church. And, you know, and when I did that, I, like, learned certain things. You know, it was like Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Like, those were the things. And then I was like, ooh, I was like, that was it. And so now, when I look at it, I kind of ask myself, what is it that I do that makes me a Buddhist? And I think that's what I want us to talk about for a bit. In a group discussion, we're going to take maybe, like, I don't know, 10 minutes or so. And whether you've received the precepts or not received the precepts, whether you've been doing this practice for a long time or not, you can sort of talk about the ways that you maybe aspire to, because hopefully many of us here are aspiring to become Buddhists, or maybe many of us are hopefully trying to reconnect with that sense of like, of Buddhism, of like practicing. And I want you to maybe talk in groups for 10 minutes and answer the prompt. What is it like? What do you do? What do you do as a Buddhist, or what do you hope to do as a Buddhist? Do we think we can do that? In the Zendo, I guess you guys can maybe groups of like, I don't know, 3 or 4, and then I'm the Zoom host, so I'll kick up some breakout rooms. Okay, give me just a second.
Recording in progress.
Okay, we'll give everybody in the Dirt Zendo a minute while they rearrange their chairs. Right, while they're getting set up, I'm going to say just a couple of things about the Dirt Zendo while they, I don't know if they want to rearrange their chairs or not. So for those of us in the cloud, I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm a long way away from Portland. But for the Jukai ceremony, I actually flew out to Portland and I participated in the Dirt Zendo for it. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And one that I would highly, highly, highly recommend to everybody here. If you have the chance, make a trip up to Portland and go to the Dirt Zendo, if for no other reason. I mean, they're great people. They're wonderful people. But the setup in there, it's really hard to describe how much they care about us, like without like sitting in the Dirt Zendo and seeing how prominent we are and how everybody listens attentively. It is a really magical, magical setup. And if you have the opportunity, I highly, highly recommend going there, because it's often easy to get lost in the like 3x3 box of your own Zoom screen, but it is really, really wonderful to see how much we matter to them. And I know I see Betty there. She's usually the Sangha connector on Sundays, and it's a lot of work. Like, they put in a lot of work to make it a good experience for us, and it's worth it. Okay, all right. I'm gonna say a couple of things, and then maybe if we want to, if anybody wants to bring up what they talked about in the breakout rooms, we can do that if we have time. But there's just a few things that I want to say before my time is out. Generally, the way I like to think about these kind of like discussions that I lead is I'll keep a little like a little notebook that my kid also draws in. I have some great like smiley faces right there. And just sort of as thoughts come to my mind, I'll just write them down. And one of the most interesting things that kept coming up for me, this is a stretch, but stick with me, is these, I grew up in the late 90s, and these bracelets were really popular when I was growing up that had WWJD on them. I don't know if you guys remember this phenomenon, but the WWJD would stand for like, what would Jesus do? And the idea, I relentlessly mocked those types of kids when I was young. But when I thought about it, when I revisited it, I thought, if it's genuine, what a wonderful connection for you to make to your spiritual ambitions when you're going through your daily life and you're trying to navigate a very, very complicated set of circumstances that we all try to navigate every day. And, you know, not to make it the same, but that's, to me, that's what I mean when I talk about the precepts as a connection to our past. These 16 precepts were important enough for Dogen to go all the way across to China to receive the true Dharma. This is what he brought back. These are the things that he brought back. These are these teachings. This is central among the teachings that For generations, people have lived their lives entirely for the purpose of passing these things on. So when you think about like whether or not it's worth doing or whether or not it's something of value, it's right at the beginning of the Kyoji Kaimon. This is the meaning of the transmission of living wisdom. This is it right here. And this is our opportunity, like, to shape our lives in this way. And I want to read two more quotes and kind of briefly talk about them before we go. And the first is from Kyogen Carlson, who is, so we talked about Jiyu Kennett earlier, Shasta Abbey. She brought Zen, our lineage of Zen, to the United States. And Kyogen and Gyokoko Carlson, who founded Dharma Rain Center, Dharma Rain Zen Center, that's where Domyo studied. So Gyokoko was her teacher, but Kyogen was her husband, and they did a lot of things together. They learned this tradition from Roshi Kennett. And in a book, he's talking about the precepts, and he says this, and I think this is really important. A person is ready to receive the precepts when they want to turn toward them, not when they have reached some degree of purity regarding them. And I think that's an important thing to kind of like keep in mind, is that if you feel ready, if you feel like this is important enough for you to make a vow to something you don't fully understand, I mean, that's a really good indication that you're ready for this. A lot of the vows that we make in our everyday lives are things that we don't understand. When I made marriage vows to my wife, I had no idea what that would entail. I had no idea, but I knew that that felt right to me, and I knew that I was ready to make that step. And I think that if you feel a connection to this, if you feel like this is something that you are ready to do, I think that that's the most important thing, and especially more important than some sort of ability to follow these or not follow these. The next quote that I want to bring up is probably the weirdest and most indirect. This comes from Dogen himself, so it's going to sound very Dogen-y. It's going to be very not straightforward. And it's actually not about precepts at all, but it is about an important, I think, part of the precepts that I want to talk about. And so this actually comes from Busho, which is where Dogen is writing about Buddha nature. And he starts by quoting the Buddha. And so he begins by quoting the Buddha. The Buddha says, "Wanting to know the meaning of the Buddha nature, we should just reflect real time, causes, and circumstances. When the time has come, the Buddha nature is manifest before us." And now Dogen begins. So this is the Dogen part. This wanting to know the meaning of the Buddha nature does not only mean knowing. It means wanting to practice it, wanting to experience it, wanting to preach it, and wanting to forget it. Such preaching, practicing, experiencing, forgetting, misunderstanding, not misunderstanding, and so on, are all the causes and circumstances of real time. Okay, so he's talking about consequences and causes and circumstances of real time. To me, the most important part of this passage is the wanting to practice it, wanting to experience it, wanting to preach it, and wanting to forget it. Preaching, practicing, experiencing, forgetting, misunderstanding, not misunderstanding, all of those things are central to precept practice. Misunderstanding, not misunderstanding, forgetting, all of it is what precept practice is about. If you're concerned that you can't follow them, that's not the whole part. The whole part is constantly revisiting, constantly coming back to this moment, constantly coming back to vows that you have made, constantly coming back and re-experiencing, reliving your life in the way that you want to. It's difficult. At times it can be relentless. At times you can want to forget them. At times you can want to go away from it. But there's something that will bring you back. And that is the most important part about precept practice. It's constantly coming back to the vows that you've made in order to shape your life in a way that you want to go. Okay, we got just a couple of minutes. I don't know. Oh, Ginger's already up. Let's do it.
Can you hear me? Thank you. You just painted a beautiful picture of the importance and the value of what we're doing and how we study this. So I really appreciate that. I will pass on a tip, which you may or may not like, and then I will make one final comment. When I first did the precepts for the very first time, one of Domya's Dharma sisters, Shintai, was around a lot. And I was talking to her about them, and she said that if I was going to take Jukai, I should read the Kyojukai Mon every day. It's hard to do because it takes 10 or 15 minutes, and it's, you know, a little dry here and there. Mysterious if it's your first time going through, you know, what the heck is Bodhidharma saying, blah, blah, blah. But I did my best with that. And I just recommend that to everybody. Not that it may or may not change you, may or may not help you, but we just need to get down and roll around in this to figure out what it means to us. And then the last thing I will read, and I don't have my glasses, so it'll take me just a little second, extra second. For those who are afraid, we talked in our little group about, you know, they're really kind of cushy. They're soft. If you bump into one, you're not going to hurt yourself. If you break one, you're not going to hurt yourself. But it says right at the beginning, and this really touches me under the gateway of contrition, because of their limitless compassion, because of their limitless compassion, the Buddhas and Dharma ancestors have flung wide the gates of compassion to all of us. So these are about compassion. And because they had, they up there behind me in the heavens, had so much compassion for us, they gave us these. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Jinryu. I was going to say once a week, but then I felt bad about giving two homework assignments instead of one. But I literally had written down, read the whole thing once a week. Out loud. By the way, if you're going to read it out loud. It's going to seem weird, but nobody's watching. And you don't have to make sense of it. Just read it. Okay. Well, I think, do I do the dedication, I guess. Thanks everybody. Precept season has officially begun. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time. All honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas. Wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Mike.